You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent. Coming up, Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark says he'll be leaving his job to work for the Department of Homeland Security. We'll find out how some are reacting to his potential departure.
First, Chuck Klosterman has been steeped in American pop culture for years. He started off by writing about sports, and then when the firewall between sports journalism and other areas burned down, he moved on to music.
Most of Klosterman's new book is about sports and music, but he makes time for TV, nostalgia, and Mountain Dew. Over the years, Klosterman has written for Spin, The Washington Post, and GQ. He's also the author of best-selling books, including Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs. His latest book is called Chuck Klosterman 10, a highly specific, defiantly incomplete history of the early 21st century. He's in Wisconsin for two book events. Chuck, thanks for stopping by the studio.
Thanks for having me. It's very flattering.
So your book is, there's a big X on the cover of this very stark black and white book, the numeral 10, Roman numeral 10. It's your 10th book, and you're revisiting all these old stories. You're hanging out with your old work, rekindling these sources, calling them on the phone. You're really thinking deeply about what you wrote in the aughts. Did that feel unnatural at all to form deeper connections with your earlier writing?
I wouldn't say it feels unnatural as much as it just feels bad. Because you go back and you read things you've done, you've written in the past, you know, and it is impossible. I don't know if this is how it is for all writers, but certainly this way for me, that if I go back and read something that I, you know, wrote 5 years ago, which I normally never do. I never reread my old books or anything like that. But when you're putting together an anthology, you have to do this. You spend the whole time thinking, well, the idea of this story isn't so terrible, but boy, I used punctuation poorly in this, and that joke is stupid. Why did I do that? And it's like, I could have cut this out, nobody would miss it, or why didn't I talk about this thing that was actually the most important thing? Every piece seems bad. And, you know, you have this weird sort of cognitive dissonance where you have to convince yourself, well, you know, you are republishing this work and expecting people to buy it, so it doesn't make a lot of sense for you to fixate on how you hate it, but that's just the way it is, you know? It's hard to be a normal person.
You were born in Breckenridge, Minnesota, sharing a border with Wahpeton,
yes,
North Dakota.
Yes.
I'm going to project here that you had a somewhat Fargo-ish upbringing. How might that have informed your path as a pop culture observer and writer out there on the prairie?
Well, first of all, I didn't have a Fargo-ish growing up. That was like...
Oh,
urban
metropolitan.
Life.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was, because I grew up on a farm outside of a town called Wymer, North Dakota. Wymer had like 500 people. We were 65 miles south of Fargo. And Fargo was almost like an aspirational place. I mean, we didn't have cable growing up. Nobody in town had cable, certainly not on the farms. You know, we had very limited radio options. So the only culture I got was like the most populous, biggest culture there was. In fact, I've mentioned this before, but remember that song Small Town by John Cougar Mellencamp?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Well, I used to listen to that song, and I always assumed he was talking about places like Wymer. I had no idea he was talking about, like, Indianapolis and, like, you know, Milwaukee and stuff. Like, that's what he considered to be a small town. When I found out that he was actually referring to places which to me seemed like a completely major market, I was shocked. Like, it's still weird to me to think that Fargo to the world is a small town, is almost a rural town. It will never seem that way to me.
You sit down with these incredibly high-profile people, from Kobe Bryant to Taylor Swift. At one point, you tell Kobe Bryant that there's no point pretending you're going to have a normal conversation because there's nothing normal about it. Does it still feel like a human transaction, the conversations you have, the interviews that you have with these celebrities?
I don't know if many other journalists do this or do these interviews the way I do. In fact, I'm pretty sure that they don't. But, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years now. What I have found is that particularly when you're dealing with kind of these apex performers, you know, Kobe Bryant or Taylor Swift, you know, Bono from U2, or, you know, like, you know, Britney Spears, the really, really, really famous people, people who are, for lack of a better term now, famous for what they do, but also famous purely for their fame. This idea that somehow I'm going to sit down with them in a limited amount of time and convince them that we're having a normal conversation, that just seems like a completely fraudulent thing to me now. So what I do at this point in my career is I say, hey, look, you know, I know you're only here because this is something you do as a part of your life now, as somebody who has to deal with a mediated culture. And the only reason I'm going to be able to ask you the questions I'm going to ask you is because I have a tape recorder and I am taking notes. You know, there's nothing real about this. But the things I'm going to ask you are things I am authentically interested in. They are not things I'm asking because I think this is what a journalist is supposed to do. I want to know this stuff, and this is how it's going to be. I'm going to ask these questions, and you be as honest as you can, and I'll try to be as objective as I can. And I have found that that works better.
Let's stick with Kobe Bryant for a second here. And at the end of the interview, you're walking out to your rent-a-car, and you're thinking, that really worked. What made that one so special?
Well, here again, or I should say, this is like always odd to sort of concede this, but when you interview celebrities and you do these profiles, if they are great, most of that credit actually does go to the subject. I mean, Kobe Bryant made a decision, I don't know why, but he made a decision either the day that interview happened or a few days before, that I'm just going to be candid now. And I'm going to answer any question the guy asked me as honestly as I can. And I'm even going to bring up stuff that I know he wants to ask but might feel uncomfortable doing so. I mean, it was just, you know, sometimes with a musician or an actress or something, you know, they have a vested interest in being interesting in the interview. It could help their career. It doesn't really help athletes. What athletes do is an objective thing. There's no subjective quality. So usually when you talk to an athlete, they're not really willing to sort of expose themselves
to
or show vulnerability.
Yeah.
But he just made the decision, I'm going to be this way now. And I've never really had an interview like that where, you know, he brought up the accusations of rape against him before I did. I was going to ask him, but he brought it up. And I think it's because I started the interview by saying, look, I'm just going to ask you these things. I'm not going to pretend like we're going to be friends after this. This is it.
Yeah. We're talking right now with Chuck Klosterman. His new book is 10, A Highly Specific, Defiantly Incomplete History of the Early 21st Century. And it's a revisit of your pieces that you've done so many for so many outlets. You equate yourself to Charlie Brown. You identify with Charlie Brown. I'm wondering, what would Charlie Brown say right now to the West Wing, to the Trump administration?
Oh, good grief. I don't know. That sounds like a setup. Well, what would Charlie Brown say to Trump? Well, you know, the thing about Charlie Brown is he is an incredibly optimistic person. It doesn't matter how many times the football gets pulled away. He's like, maybe this time. So I suppose Charlie Brown would actually be like, you know, you can still be a mediocre president. You can still do this. I think he would try to support Trump, weirdly. But then Linus would be like, you're crazy.
You end the book talking about death, a topic you say you used to be obsessed with. But all that changes when you have kids. You see the passing of a parent. What is your view on death these days?
Well, the thing that's sort of, you know, the irony in this is I wrote a book called Killing Yourself to Live when I was 33, where I was just obsessed with the idea of death. Now, you know, my father has died. I've had friends die. Obviously, my body is breaking down. I have kids now. Death is actually much more involved in my existence, but I don't think about it now as a theoretical thing. And I feel like now I'm almost pushed away from the idea of the entertainment value or sort of the cultural significance or symbolic value of people dying. And I think that's happened because of the internet. I think the internet has changed the way we look at life.
And you had a pivotal moment when Prince died and you realized something about yourself and how you view pop culture.
I was walking into a movie theater in the middle of the afternoon, find out on my phone that Prince has died. Go in and watch the movie, spend 2 hours kind of thinking about Prince, you know. It seemed like it was a big deal to me, right? Because I loved Prince growing up for all these different reasons. But then I get out of the theater, check my phone, and seemingly on all these social media extensions, I guess I didn't care about Prince at all. People were just losing their mind and being so performative about the passing of the stranger they had never met, and in a way really talking about themselves, finding ways to sort of attach the significance of their life with the significance of this great artist. And it just made me think, I got to think about other things.
Chuck, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Chuck Klosterman is a best-selling author and journalist. His new book is titled Chuck Klosterman 10, A Highly Specific, Defiantly Incomplete History of the Early 21st Century. He'll be appearing in Madison tonight at 7 o'clock at the Madison Public Library. Tomorrow, Friday, May 19th, he'll be at Boswell Books in Milwaukee at 7 o'clock as well.
This is Central Time.